Here it is!
From deep inside your audio device of choice.
Ladies and gentlemen, on this week's show, one more look back at recent moments on this broadcast. But first, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
NBA Commissioner Adam Silver has apologized to employees at Turner Sports who've been adversely impacted by the league's ongoing television rights negotiations. Most of the focus has been on the possible end of the network's popular Inside the NBA studio show. Silver acknowledged the difficulties for the many people who work behind the scenes. The league is nearing an 11-year, $76 billion deal with NBC, Amazon, and ESPN that would leave the main network carrying NBA games right now, TNT, on the outside looking in. Quote, I will say directly from me to the people that seem to be the most impacted right now, the folks at Turner Sports, I apologize that this has been a prolonged process. Silver said, I know they're committed to their jobs. No one likes this uncertainty. And I think it's on the league office to bring these negotiations to a head and conclude them as quickly as we can. Charles Barkley, one of the hosts of Inside the NBA, said curtly, the situation sucks. Dateline London, British Prime Minister Rishi Sunak joined other world leaders in a D-Day commemoration ceremony, but left early to do a TV interview.
I returned home before the International Leaders event. That was a mistake, and I apologise for that. But I will always be proud of our record in supporting veterans here in the UK.
Toyota Chairman Akio Toyoda apologised this week for massive cheating on certification tests for seven vehicle models. The automaker suspended production of three of them. The wide-ranging fraudulent testing at Japan's top automaker involved the use of inadequate or outdated data in collision tests and incorrect testing of airbag inflation and near-seat damage in crashes. Engine power tests were also found to have been falsified. Sports commentator Pat McAfee is explaining his intentions and apologizing for offending viewers with his recent comments about WNBA superstar Caitlin Clark. You've heard of her. Yes, McAfee took some time out on a new episode of his show to explain that when referring to Clark as a, quote, white bitch, unquote, on Monday's show, he meant it in a complimentary way, and that he's since apologized to Clark for his words. Quote, yesterday when talking about sports, I utilized a descriptor that I certainly should not have used. When I was saying it, I legitimately meant it in a complimentary fashion. And as I said it, honestly, I had no idea what was happening on the internet until 2 hours after. The leader of Australia's most populous state apologized this week for the, quote, unforgivable pain, unquote, caused by previous laws criminalizing homosexuality. It's 40 years after gay sex was decriminalized in New South Wales. Quote, we're here to apologize for every life that was damaged or diminished or destroyed by these unjust laws, said Premier Chris Minns. The legislation, he said, should never have existed. And not apologizing, John Yoo. He crawled out from under his faculty rock at UC Berkeley. Yes, UC Berkeley. To write an essay in the National Review arguing for revenge prosecutions. Quote, this is referring to the conviction of Donald Trump a couple weeks ago. Quote, repairing this breach of constitutional norms will require Republicans to follow the age-old maxim, do unto others as they have done unto you. In order to prevent the case against Trump from assuming a permanent place in the American political system, Republicans will have to bring charges against Democratic officers, even presidents, unquote. case you've forgotten what he was famous for a couple decades ago. It was writing a memo authorizing torture for U.S. detainees in the Iraq War.
He just wrote and ran.
Who is you?
Torture memo man.
Who is you?
He went and banned the band.
Who is you?
Torture memo man. You got you some detainees. You don't know what to do. Miranda rights, or cover them with poo? Are you doing something illegal, or proper through and through? There's only one guy to call, the one to ask is you.
That is a bad mother.
Who is you?
He's in that secret clan. Torture memo man.
Who is you?
He had a clever plan.
Who is you?
Torture memo man. Oh, you've got some evildoers, and they will not say boo. A little pain and torment might change their point of view. But before you waterboard them, you wonder, could they sue? One guy has got the answer, the one to ax is you.
Shut your mouth, I'm talking about God.
Who is you?
He just wrote and ran.
Who is you?
Torture memo man. Went and banned the band.
Who is you?
Torture memo man. All these laws and treaties, you want something new. This war may last forever, you need to turn the screw. He's teaching law at Berkeley, he'll drop the other shoe. Bill of Rights expired. The one who knows is you.
Who is you?
Catch him if you can.
Who is you?
Torture memo man.
Who is you?
He just banned the band.
Hello, welcome to the show.
About any Well, I got nothing against the press. They wouldn't print it if it wasn't true. If you wanna know about the gay politician, if you wanna know how to drive your car, if you wanna know about the new safe position, you can read it in the Sunday papers.
Ladies and gentlemen from London, England, this program has a lot of kind of serious content today, so let's begin with something so ultimately trivial. In a tribute to one of the classics of early television, let's call it Your Show of So's. Yes, people answering questions, starting with the word so, as if it's a conclusion that they haven't yet even started to reach. Today, our so's come from the BBC, and thanks to a tip from a Le Show listener, from NPR's Science Friday. So sit back, relax, and let this be your Sunday of so's.
Explain how it might be possible to drill through an aquifer containing clean drinking water to get at the shale gas down below, and then fracturing the rock down there without causing a release of the methane into the water.
So the reservoirs we're fracturing are several thousands or several thousands of meters deep.
Now, Robin, you've already put some of the practices that Murray has been suggesting into place, and you've seen a massive difference, haven't you?
So we were traditional ram breeders, Suffolk breeders before.
What have you got here?
So this is a New Zealand Suffolk shearling ram.
Let's go through a couple of your favorites. Give us your favorite.
So the favorites for me are stuff that you build that then gets the kids wet.
How tall can a tsunami wave be on the sun?
Well, so the tsunamis that we're looking at are generally about 90 million meters above the photosphere.
What can you learn?
Well, so when we see these tsunamis, it generally means that there's a blob of plasma has been fired out into space.
Are these recent discoveries, the tsunamis?
Well, actually, they were first observed in 1997 using a spacecraft called SOHO.
What's going on there?
Well, so the sun has an 11-year cycle of activity.
Some new developments in the initial SO this week. They're preceded by Well and Right. And now, ladies and gentlemen,
this all comes in the wake of an abortive next marriage for Rupert. It was a lady named Smith. They were going to be married later this spring. Rupert had been quoted as saying that this would be the last one, marriage, I guess. And so he was assuming it would be a good one because it's got to last. He's 92. And then within days, that impending marriage was called off by him. You know, it's always sad when these things happen, ladies and gentlemen, and I acknowledge that. It's obvious. But it's just remarkable how the marriage to Jerry Hall, former mate of Mick Jagger, by the way, how that ended when it began so very well.
Well, they call me the honky-tonk fogey, but this geezer's getting ready to blow. I'm lighting up a major stogie. I'm rocking my world nice and slow. I got me a rock and roll woman. Then I had a cut of hair. I know I look glum, but she's under my thumb. Wild horses couldn't end this affair. Refined sugar, I know you're mad for me. Refined sugar, but you're my next destiny. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, she had the height and the beauty. I had the power and greed. She said, can you give me shelter? I said, you can get what you need. She's a Siamese cat of a girl. I'm a man of wealth and taste. It's a drag getting old, but not to sound cold. My body's a terrible thing to waste. Refined sugar, I know you're bad for me. Refined sugar, I won't put you on page 3. Silver. She makes a grown man cry in bed. She said, when I gave her the diamond, keep fidelity in your head. I'll be like a little red rooster when we walk down the aisle arm in arm. We'll honeymoon in Claridge's when it comes to marriages. The fourth time is the charm. Refined sugar, I know you're bad for me. Refined sugar, you're what I take with tea.
I am so lovely. be misunderstood. So lady, 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 good to me. Oh, won't you show some pity? I am all alone, alone in this big city. I'm just a poor baby who's lost in the wood. So, lady, 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 be so good to me. You show us some pity. I am all alone, alone in this big city. I'm just a poor, poor baby who's lost in a wood. Lady, 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 be so good.
See, it's officially the end of summer. So I thought a good idea today would be to share some ideas on your favorite vacation this summer. Absolutely non-controversial and pretty benign topic for a phone-in segment. So let's hear your thoughts on your favorite vacation this summer. Line one, you're on the air.
Hello, Mr. Sudhir.
Hello.
This is your old friend, Shab Shab.
Yes, Shab Shab, I recognize you. You get in right away.
Yes, sir. I have a very fast dialing finger.
No, but every time.
Yes.
Well, I'm glad you have fast fingers. Shab Shab, I should clarify to the audience, this is someone who's called us before several times. He was one of Saddam Hussein's famous lookalikes when Saddam Hussein was in power and over in Iraq. Shab Shab, where are you calling from today?
Sir, I'm not at liberty to tell you where I'm calling from today,
no.
But this is my favorite vacation this year so far.
All right. Well, what makes it so good?
My neighbors can't find me here.
So, are you having neighbor problems?
Mr. Sudhir, the entire country is having neighbor problems.
Well,
I don't know what you're reading or what you're eating for that matter.
Yeah.
I'm still in Iraq.
Okay.
I will never leave Iraq.
Good.
It is my home.
Mm-hmm.
It is my homeland.
Mm-hmm.
It is my land.
Okay.
But it's being torn apart right now, and I can't live where I used to live.
Yeah.
I can't live where I lived after that.
Mm-hmm.
So I can, for the moment, live
where you're
living
now.
Yes, sir.
Okay, so that would be your almost a permanent vacation, you're saying?
Until I have to move again, yes, sir.
All right. Now, Shab Shab, just to clarify, is this just sort of petty neighborhood disputes, or is this something? Does this have anything to do with the sectarian violence of a few years ago?
Yeah, it has everything to do with that, Mr. Shreer. I could not live in my old neighborhood, which was Sunni.
Mm-hmm.
I moved to a Shiite neighborhood. I could not live there either.
Wow.
Because I'm neither Sunni nor Shiite.
Really?
I belong to a very small tribe called the Shinus, and we are not accepted by either side.
Wow.
So it's a caught in the middle, as you would say.
Wow. The Shinus.
Yes, sir. But in the 14th century, there was a marriage between a Shiite tribe, member of a Shiite tribe, and a member of a Sunni tribe, and it formed a new tribe. And I tell you, Mr. Sharir,
yes.
Given the hostility and the violence and the, everything that's going around us, if my religion allowed for posthumous annulment, I would file for it, reverse that marriage,
yes.
Because it's been nothing but trouble.
I don't think any religion allows for posthumous annulment.
Well, then a pox on all of them.
Well.
But I tell you, Mr. Sharir, I'm not calling to complain.
Good.
This is the fate of my people, my country.
Yes.
Since the Americans pulled out, it's gotten the violence is worse.
Well,
by that I mean for the people who are doing it,
it's better.
But for the other people, it's
worse. Yes. So, Shab, when you say you're having this is your best vacation.
Yes, sir.
Are you? Last few times we talked, you had a fairly thriving business. You were selling high end.
Audio
equipment.
Yes.
Have you taken up that that trade in your new abode,
Mr. Sharir?
Yes.
Just ask yourself, who in their right mind is going to buy $5,000 KEF speakers and blast them with $10,000 tube preamp and $20,000 amp of various manufacturers, when all it's going to do is call attention to the fact that somebody in this house has money and therefore boom goes the house the next day?
Yeah.
No, sir. But it is not speakers, it is not amplifiers, it is not preamps, it's not anything that sits in your house and goes boom. It's something portable, and it's something that you carry with you and gives you great sound wherever you go.
Okay, I'm guessing headphones?
You are correct, sir.
Ah.
The Bomb by Saddam.
The Bomb?
Is the line of headphones I
by Saddam.
Helped to organize, and I was consultant on. I was a partner in the company.
Good.
And of course, I am the Saddam, the figurehead, I'm the front, I'm the face of the company.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the Bomb by Saddam headphones, which are selling like, do you have in America hot cakes?
We have hot cakes.
Do you have hot cakes?
All right. They're selling well.
Yes, they are.
Good.
And so this is a new life for me.
Mm-hmm.
My family, of course, is at a secure location elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
I see them very via Skype more than not. But it's what passes for the good life.
Shab, something occurs to me. If... you are known to, I guess, your enemies.
Yes, sir.
As a member of this Shinu tribe.
Yes.
And you've had to leave your home.
Yes, sir.
Your previous home. How can you be out making public appearances as the face of the Bomb by Saddam headphones?
Mr. Sharir, I ask you to think with your head for one time, please.
Okay.
I am the face of the Bomb by Saddam headphones. And the packaging,
yes.
And the advertising,
yes.
And the marketing materials,
okay.
And the PR, the press kits that go out, in no way do I make public appearances.
Understood. And so you just sit there in your undisclosed location and collect the profits.
I do more than that, Mr. Sharir.
Okay.
I devise the marketing campaigns. I devise the slogans. The new slogan for the Bomb by Saddam is, it'll blow your head off. Which, you know, it's not amusing in the current context, but it does make the point, and it has an emotional resonance with Sunnis and Shiites alike because
I can see that, yes.
The obvious reason.
Yes. So Shab, a working vacation, I guess you would say,
sure.
Is your best vacation of the year.
Yes.
And I always appreciate hearing from you
and
catching up on what's going on over there. Thank you for participating in this time-wasting segment of the program.
Thank you, Mr.
Shab, calling from somewhere in Iraq today here on the show.
I guess I'm just lucky so-and-so.
Back to our issue with people beginning their sentences. Their answers to questions with the word so, as if They're not concluding anything. They're starting something. Well, they sure have started something with me. And maybe with you, too. From BBC's Radio 4, an interview with a politician on the troublesome issue of immigration. He begins both of his answers with the all-important word, so. So join us, won't you, as we enjoy the so's of the week.
Mr. Webb, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
What's the problem here, that they're foreigners or that they don't live in this country?
So the problem is that we have a system that was invented after the Second World War.
And some would wonder if that's discriminatory.
So the transitional arrangements apply wherever you've come from.
Sounds, makes him sound smart. Makes him sound smarter than a politician. So he says so. So. Ladies and gentlemen, I don't know if you saw this story, but the legendary Bob Dylan is not bitching about the Masters of War these days. He's doing something else. He's coming out with his own line of whiskey. Heaven's Door is the brand, and he's not only endorsing it, he's a co-owner of the company. He's like Victor Kiam. He liked the booze so much he bought the company. They're coming out with three whiskeys that Dylan apparently personally was involved in the development of the distilling process. Because as he was quoted as saying, he sent one back because he wanted it to smell, wanted it to have the, I don't know if he said the taste or the smell, of being in a wood interior. You could just buy a cabin. But no, joining the ranks of Madonna and a lot of rappers, he becomes what, in the words of the trade paper, The Hollywood Reporter, a few years back when Madonna announced a vodka deal, he joined the ranks of celebrity booze endorsers.
You've been selling some kind of glamour since 1986. Roughed up clothes, a coked up nose, all were in the mix. But now that you've got children, that don't seem so cool. So you got to pull some Jacksons to pay for private school. In the days gone by, you would have got coarser and coarser. You're playing it smooth. You're a celebrity booze endorser. So your demographics all grown up. They like the finer things, but a Mercedes deal's not in the cards. Your DUI still clings. You're too cool to push cell phones. Your designs are gone from Saks, but you can't live on ringtones and promoting foreign snacks. There's no need to shout, you're tired of waking up hoarser. Now you're playing it smooth, you're a celebrity booze endorser. So sexy, the white goods look so clean. The whole affair's been walked upstairs. It's a brand new day, a bold new fashion scene. Oh, your face is back on billboards on the other side of town. Your brand is aspirational, you're an up without a down. Folks with a drinking problem can read the teeny print, but you're late for a photo shoot and they're paying you a mint. If you were a god, you know you couldn't look norser. Now you're playing it smooth. This week shoes. You're a celebrity booze endorser. Celebrity booze endorser.
From New Orleans, Louisiana, this is Le Show.
This is AC-370, the search for Flight 370. Here again and again is Anderson Cooper.
Day 16, and hopefully there's no end in sight. Again tonight, we're keeping them honest, and we don't even know who they are or what they've been doing. And CNN's continuing coverage, like the search area itself, keeps expanding. Earlier this week, a familiar face returned to this network as our former space correspondent, Miles O'Brien, returned as an aviation analyst. After all, it's all flight. Now we're welcoming back another old friend, I guess I should say familiar face, no stranger to stories where information is, to put it mildly, at a premium, and taking over for the next little while, unless there's any real news, in which case Wolf Blitzer will be back. But in the meantime, here's our old friend, Larry King.
Thanks, Anderson. What a story this is. Full of twists and turns, but no road. We got a great panel here. They're going to help us go over again what we don't know, and I should fit right in, because when it comes to aviation, avionics, anything, I know from nothing. Just strap me in and give me an Ambien. In our Los Angeles studio tonight is a former FBI psychic, Rhonda Matsui. In our Atlanta headquarters is our own disaster meteorologist, Stormy Frost. And in a voiceover studio in London, a travel authority recognized worldwide, the Travelocity Gnome. Rhonda, let's start with you. What kind of cases does the FBI need a psychic for?
You'd be surprised, Larry.
Hey, if I'm awake at the end of the hour, I'd be surprised. But go ahead. Short answers are killers right now.
Well, for example, when a profiler has hit a dead end in analyzing the clues surrounding a possible perpetrator, I'll be called in, given an article of clothing, or a pen, or even a toothbrush, anything the possible perpetrator may have touched. And then I use my gift to contact the spirit of that person and to mentally question him or her.
And how many cases have you helped to solve?
That depends on what you mean by solve.
Okay, you've had a bath towel in your possession, which CNN exclusively got hold of through one of our Malaysian hotel sources. It was supposedly in the room where the co-pilot of Flight 370 may have recently stayed. What can that towel tell us?
Well, Larry, first problem, it was very recently laundered.
Oh, I bet that's the first time they had that complaint about that.
I know, but in my field, that removes about 90% of the useful psychic information.
Well, what can it tell you?
It was laundered with other towels, a very strong detergent with bleach at about 115 degrees for a good long wash cycle.
Okay, and what about the co-pilot?
I got a very weak connection with him, Larry. And so far, the only message I've gotten from him is something to the effect of someone should make sure the Mile High Club stuff is erased from the flight simulator.
Okay, Stormy Frost in our Atlanta Severe Weather Center.
Actually, Larry, I'm in the Nasty Weather Center. Severe is down the hall.
Okay, we keep hearing about storms and currents in the South Pacific. What else can you tell us, and how long can you take?
Larry, as you know, it's been from 2 to 4 days between the time satellite imagery showed something in the water to the time those images have been released. How far can that something, whatever it is, travel in 2 to 4 days? Well, as you might guess, that depends on the speed of the current and the winds, as well as their direction at that particular spot in the ocean. And, of course, 2 to 4 days later, we don't even know for sure where that spot is. Here's what we do know right now. Really bad outlook down there for the rest of the weekend. Really, if you have a choice, I'd say search in the northern arc this weekend. It's mainly sunny up there. Fair, mild temperatures in the southern arc over the South Pacific. Well, you remember the polar vortex we had last January. It's a lot like that, only without the snow.
Stormy, any link between this kind of weather and climate change?
No, Larry. This is normal weather for this part of the world at this time of year.
Okay, but normal could be caused by climate change too, right?
Let me get back to you on that.
To London and the Travelocity Gnome. You go all over the place and you never move. So that must give you a unique perspective on this puzzling mystery.
Well, not really, Larry.
I'm as puzzled as the next gnome. We have no idea what happened, and we have no idea where the plane and its passengers might be.
Yeah. Tell me something we don't know. We got a question from a viewer for the gnome. Mm. Tinker Ben writes, I've been hearing a lot the last few days about Australia. What is that?
Well, it's just like a smaller America, with a big dollop of England on top of it.
And for our FBI psychic, Rhonda Mitsui, this via Twitter from BlueGene97. Is it possible that the plane could have entered another dimension, perhaps given the new theory of multiverses, even another universe? If so, how do we get it back? Rhonda.
Larry, I'm no expert, but that sounds like more than 140 characters to me.
And that makes you suspicious?
Well, it just makes me wonder if BlueGene97 knows something about Twitter that the rest of us don't.
Yeah, good point. Stormy.
Larry, just have to chime in here. Any other universe would most likely have completely different weather. So that's another huge intangible we're dealing with here.
And in that other universe, Stormy, they might not even have climate change.
No, they might not.
And the questions keep asking themselves. The answers got nothing to say. Anderson.
Thanks, Larry. Coming up in the next hour, Martin climbs into the news coverage simulator to see what our coverage would be like if a different scenario unfolds. Then something very much like this hour, but an hour later. Stay with us.
Sports brings to mind our guest here in the studio this morning, a man who is no stranger to this audience, Kurt Gowdy. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Harry.
You're in from Boston just for what?
Well, for just a couple days. We're having meetings today, tonight, tomorrow. The final plans are being laid for what I think in history is going to be remembered as one of the great new ventures, an organized professional sport.
That's exciting, Kurt. Of course, sure history... It's kind of a long memory, but this is not team boxing by any chance, is it?
No, Harry, of course not. Team boxing was a concept of the 70s. We're talking about the sport of the 80s. Mm-hmm. Major Indoor Baseball League, or the Major League Indoor Baseball. We haven't quite got the legal clearance on which we can call it yet. It's either MLB or MLB.
Major Indoor Baseball, though. What exactly?
Well, Let me explain it.
Sure.
It's taking the game of baseball and bringing it indoors. Bringing it indoors, shrinking the field, speeding up the action, speeding up, bringing the fan closer to the action. The problem with baseball, of course, over the years, is if you're not sitting very close,
yeah,
you're missing the action. And, of course, it's taking place over vast, vast territory.
Yeah.
Now we're bringing it indoors where it's contained and where you can enjoy it in the comfort of an air-conditioned arena year-round, hopefully.
What exactly is the nature of your involvement in it?
Harry, of course, I've been brought in as one of the commissioners. One of the ideas we have is to have a dual commissioner league. One who brings sports expertise and credibility, and of course that's yours.
Yeah.
And another who brings business acumen.
Uh-huh.
That's so important today because you look at what has killed off many of the great professional sports leagues.
Yep.
The lack of business acumen.
Right.
It's definitely on the cards.
Well, of course, by the cards, I guess you wouldn't mean the Cardinals.
No. Within 10 years, you're going to have the National American Outdoor Leagues basically struggling and hanging by a thread while we thrive inside where it's warm and cool all year round.
Well, it's exciting as a concept, I know. Well, I can't wait personally. Kurt, thank you, and I guess there'll be a couple of Annie Oakley's waiting for me down at the Long Beach Arena.
Oh, sure.
For the plug.
Yeah.
Although, it's not necessary because, as I say, I don't really like the game.
Well, I think.
But good luck with indoor baseball and best of luck with all your projects.
Thank you, Harry. I think you like the indoor game. It's fast-moving. It's exciting. And it's built for the non-baseball fan. Thanks very much for having us here, and best of luck to you and whatever you're doing.
Reports surfaced this week that the Showtime pay television network in the United States will be airing a documentary about former Vice President Dick Cheney this coming Friday, in which he reviews the little struggle in Iraq and claims he would do it all over again exactly the same way. Wonder how all that came about.
Next, intimate tales of America's former underground vice president. The action-packed diary of the man who was just an enhanced heartbeat away from history. Dick Cheney. Confidential. Confidential. Confidential.
Whoever said the heart is a lonely hunter never had a pacemaker. Pacey and I have been hunting for vindication since we first opened a can of enhanced whoop-ass for Saddam Hussein during the early days of what the more naive among us referred to as the Bush presidency. But somehow the single-minded focus on so-called weapons of mass destruction had distracted a lot of so-called serious people from a simple fact. After all was said and done, Saddam Hussein was never again going to be in a position to try to assassinate George Herbert Walker Bush. Now, as the 10th anniversary of the war was approaching, I was being given the opportunity to, you might say, vindicate myself. One of the few forms of self-pleasuring my pacemaker would allow me. A paid television network had asked to film me for a documentary about me. I may not know everything in the world about leverage, but given my presumed central position in that particular scenario, it looked as though I had the whip hand. Fortified by some of Lynn's fine, low-fat breakfast gruel, I headed for my secure, undisclosed office with one mission in mind. Operation Get My Way. Tuesday, 10:17 a.m.
So, we did scout out this office, but in the end, we feel we'd have more control over sound and lighting if we built an office set sort of loosely based on this space.
Sound and lighting. I guess as a director, that's it's the sort of thing you tend to focus on.
Well, without those two factors under control, you might say I'd be peeing up a rope without a rope.
Cute. Here's something else that's cute.
Well, that was my good stopwatch.
Well, it stopped all right. Now listen here, pal. While you were spending the last 10 years directing cat food commercials, I was helping to direct the foreign and military policy of the most powerful nation on the planet. You make some enemies that way. Putting myself in your little studio is a fine way of making me more vulnerable than a starlet in a Turkish bath.
I also did all the really cool Cialis spots, but okay, I understand. We'll make this place work. Obviously, we'll need to bring in some more lights.
Normally, light's not my friend, but...
Shooting with just what you've got in here right now might give us a look that's, a little grim.
So far, I'm liking it. In any case, you'll favor my good side, I'm sure. The one where my mouth doesn't curl into a snarl.
That's in my notes, yes.
Oh, and Mr. Director, just a couple more words about my needs.
Sure.
Final cut. It's so satisfying to bring people together. It warms the heart. And it warms Pacey, too. End of partial diary for the second week of March, 2013. Sincerely yours, Dick Cheney. Confidential. Confidential.
I guess I'm just lucky so-and-so.
Yes? Even on the subject of... This is a member of the other president's review panel, the one he paid, I guess, a little more attention to than the privacy board, who's being interviewed about the board's conclusions and the president's actions and the program on the CBS This Morning program with your friend and mine, Charlie Rose. So sit back, relax, and listen to him talk about the NSA program and begin every single one of his answers, for no reason at all, with the word so.
Let's begin with Russia and the Russian Olympics. Tell us how concerned we should be about the security situation in your judgment.
So I think about this in terms of a balance sheet. And on the positive side of the balance sheet, you have extensive Russian security services.
What do you make of this, Chairman Mike Rogers of the House Intelligence Committee, suggesting that Russia may have helped Edward Snowden and may have played a larger role than we imagine?
So we just don't know. We just don't know, but like Chairman Rogers, I am concerned.
What did you think of the president's speech and the balance he took, because it did not include all the recommendations the panel recommended?
So I thought he said two very important things. One was the importance of intelligence to protecting the nation. At the same time, Charlie, he said that the government holding this data creates a potential risk to privacy and civil liberties.
What is the one recommendation that you wish he would have accepted that he did not?
So he accepted 70% of the recommendations, and he said he would study another 15. Those are the two most important.
Can you take us behind the scenes, since you're the only one at the table who was there at the panel, and give us some insight as to what went into your decision-making process, what you all were trying to do?
So we each brought very different perspectives. This was a group of folks who came with a very open mind.
Nice to have you on the team.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
Yeah, tough questions when he's on the team.
Anyway, the reports in all the Washington media, or the Washington reports in all the media, are saying that the president's inner circle is closing fast as some people resign. So it seems as if he may still have his fans, but he seems to be running out of friends.
Hi, it's Phil, the Our Blanket Man. Thank you for calling.
Phil, this is Don.
How can I help you today, Don?
President Don.
Won't you please leave your name and number?
Phil, I've called you before. I know this isn't a damn recording.
Okay, Don, how are you?
Well, how the freaking Phoenix do you think I am?
Well, You acknowledged you're not going to be...
You know who acknowledged that?
Mm.
The stupid aide who wrote that script and shoved it in front of my face is who. Once I am out of here, they are out of here faster than anybody has ever been out of here. That's how I am.
Well, sir, look, it has been my privilege to be your official Our Blanket Man. I mean, not official, but next thing to it. And you've accomplished some great things, not just for the Our Blanket family, but for all bedding startups. So,
Phil, I can say this. You've been a true friend. So many people I thought were loyal MAGA people have turned out to have knees of clay. It's hard to believe. I mean, like impossible. So, you know better than anyone how many photo ops I've done with you.
And I appreciated it, and I was so very grateful, and I passed that message to you through Hope and Kellyanne. And
next time, tell it to a guy. It means more.
Mm.
And it's more likely to get through. So, look, I guess the blanket business is doing pretty good. So many people staying home because of the stupid COVID.
And thanks to you, sir, and I'm telling you directly now, one of those photos we did together has been hanging ever since out in my brining shed.
Well, that's great.
And a little miniaturized replica of it goes out with every Our Blanket we ship. So
Phil, are you telling me you're exploiting my name and likeness?
I think it was Hope that gave me permission.
I don't care if Hope gave you lip service. You have no right in the entire universe or any universe yet to be discovered. My lawyer, Michael Cohen, before he turned out to be a terrible snake, he taught me that. You have no right to do that, Phil, or whatever you call yourself.
Well, sir, I still call myself the Our Blanket Man. You know, you have MAGA.
I have 75 million fans, Phil.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you have 7,500. I sell that many MAGA hats every hour. Incredible, right?
Well.
So look, I'm willing to ignore the ridiculous exploitation of my name and likeness. It's all right, Phil. I wish I could say I'm surprised. I mean, if freaking Lindsey Graham, who I put up with his candy cane corn pone act for 4 years on the golf course, if he's going to go lily livid on me, you know, what am I supposed to expect from a glorified schmata peddler like you?
What I can do for you, sir, is take those little photos of us together out of any future packages of Our Blanket, just as a gesture of kind of continued goodwill.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Can you do me one more solid, Phil? Can you stuff all your cocked-up blankets up there where the sun doesn't shine?
Way ahead of you, sir. They're all in the warehouse.
Today's The Show was produced and edited by Tom Roach. Comes to you from Century Progress Productions. Thanks to Thomas Walsh, Pam Halstead, and the San Diego desk. Till next week, so long from the Crescent City.